Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to catch the Cats at Ryan Field this fall. Northwestern hosts Illinois on November 24th for Senior Day. Tickets on sale now at nusports.com. And Sage Rosenfels is brought to you by Cassidy Tire and Service. He is on Twitter at SageRosenfels18. He writes for The Athletic Minnesota, and here he is with us on The Score. Sage, hello.
Hey, good morning, guys. And thank you, Northwestern, for knocking off the Iowa Hawkeyes. As an Iowa Stater, we always appreciate that.
Wow.
Yeah, the vitriol runs deep there, doesn't it? We're going to talk with Clayton Thorson about 10:30 or so, but let's talk quarterbacking. Here at the pro level, Mitch had what many are calling his best game as a pro. I wonder if you have signed on with what he did against the Lions last Sunday.
Well, quarterbacks almost never have a perfect game. I think I remember, I think it was Rich Gannon or somebody at the end of his career saying, you know, I'm still in search of that perfect game. And he played very, very well. Did not play perfectly, but played very, very well. And obviously he has, and is using all of his weapons and has a whole bunch of them. And was for the most part, very accurate in this game. Didn't make any of those bad decisions that seems like we've seen almost every week, you know, this year. It seems like he makes one or two bad plays a game. Didn't make those in this football game. And, yeah, he was, for the bad weather, that's a very good sign also for Bears fans. He throws the ball accurately in very bad weather, and that's a good sign.
I also was noticing more rhythm to his game in where what you described as the hitches in the reads, where his shoulders are positioned when his eyes are telling him where to go with the ball. It was noticeable. He wasn't patting the ball. He wasn't moving with his feet. The fact that he had a very clean pocket and the pass protection held up as well as it did for most of the game really allowed me to see what you had been talking about the timing and some of those hitches during which you're making your decisions.
Yeah, sometimes he does that. I mean, even on that Allen Robinson touchdown pass early in the game, I think it was about a 35, 36-yarder, he actually took three hitches on that throw. And I don't understand that. Again, I'm not in that quarterback room. I'm not sure what he's being taught or you know, what their timing is. But, you know, generally on a straight go route, and that's what it was, the quarterback go, you take your steps, you take one hitch and you let it go. And obviously you look at your receiver, if you've got his man beat, you throw it deep. If the DB is playing upfield shoulder, a lot of times that's when you see that back shoulder throw. So he actually took three hitches on that play. Now Robinson got around the DB, you know, very, very quickly. He is a very good route runner and is great off the line. He got around his DB and had two or three steps on him. And then Trubisky was actually, again, a little late on that throw, allowed the DB to almost catch up and make the play. So, you know, for me, again, if a play like that, that is a rhythm throw. I would prefer that to be a little bit more on that first hitch rather than that third hitch, because a lot of times you don't always get a third hitch in the NFL.
You know, we saw Allen Robinson in that offense for the first time in a couple of weeks, Sage. I'm wondering what stood out most to you for him in that offense and for he and Mitch working together.
Well, I'll tell you what, all these receivers are good route runners, and they're all very quick, and Robinson's the biggest of them as far as I can tell. And he has an understanding of how defenses work and how leverage works, and you saw it on that late touchdown pass. It was what you'd probably call a slop route, which is a slant option route, and then he ran the slant and he had the guy deep, but he had outside leverage on that play. So anytime you have, it's all a leverage game as far as a wide receiver is concerned. When you have outside leverage, don't just run inside. Then the DB will push you more inside. Actually work against his leverage, work outside more. That DB will keep that outside leverage pushed wider. Then that opens up more space on the inside. Mitch did a nice job of removing the linebacker, the middle linebacker on that play, looking to his left and then coming back to Robinson. It ended up being a catch and a touchdown. But the space that Robinson created on the initial stem of that route, that was key because it kept him away from that middle linebacker and also gave him, again, like more leverage space from the DB who has to stay outside because his health is inside. But Trubisky took care of that help with his eyes.
One thing the Fox broadcast did was talk about how verbose these play calls are. And it could be up to 18 words, sometimes 20, in a given play call, especially when they're doing some of that no-huddle stuff, when there have to be multiple plays called, you know, to what a play is going to be killed, etc. Question I have for you, because I remember talking to Rex Grossman about this years ago after the Bears played the Falcons in a really, really cold night game. He literally said he was, at times when it's cold, he had trouble moving his lips. Like, actually, it was actually difficult for him to get a play call in because his mouth was freezing. A, has that ever happened to you? Is that a valid concern as we get into the colder months with a verbose offense?
You know, I can't say it's a concern. It's interesting. It's actually not your lips. It's your cheeks. Your cheeks will actually freeze. And I had this conversation with Favre when I played with him in 2009 in Minnesota. We would talk about these really cold games. We play that great, I think it was a Sunday night game in Chicago, went into overtime, and the Bears won that one. But yeah, your cheeks actually freeze almost up close to your eyes, and it sort of makes your mouth hard to move sometimes. So yeah, that's you'll actually see sometimes, especially quarterbacks on the sidelines, take those hand warmers and actually put them on their face and on their cheeks to try to keep their, their face loose. You're always keeping your hands warm. You got your feet. You're sitting on those seats that are heated and all those things, but your face sometimes is the thing that actually sort of freezes. And it's your cheeks, and that does happen. Is it a concern? I don't think it's a concern, but obviously for the quarterback, he has to be thinking about it in those cold games. And I said, the more concern is, can your quarterback throw in cold weather? And he definitely can, and that's a big issue. I struggle throwing in cold weather. Even a kid from Iowa State, it's not really where you're from. It's a lot of times it's how big your hands are and how strong your fingers are. I had pretty, I have big hands, but skinny fingers. A guy like Aaron Rodgers has huge hands that helps to spin in that cold weather. It looks like from what I saw in the game the other day, Trubisky did not struggle throwing in that cold weather.
Talking quarterbacking and frozen fingers with Sage Rosenfels of The Athletic, who breaks down our quarterback here in Chicago on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. I'm wondering, they came out no huddle, Sage, and went quick. Then they got up to the line of scrimmage and then looked back and kind of made their reads. How do you think they navigated that? We haven't seen a whole lot of no huddle from this offense. How do you think Mitch got through it?
Oh, it was great. I mean, it was for the most part, they moved the ball in those no huddles, and I like that. And not only was it no huddle, it was no huddle with some checks. I mean, they'd go no huddle, and then you'd see him actually audible or a kill, as you'd say, to the next play. So they're obviously have these packages that probably simplify, sort of the no huddle. We're going to go with this, and if it's, they're in a man-to-man coverage, we're going to go to this. And it's sort of automatic rather than having to, call those entirely to, two different plays in the huddle with this complex process. Sometimes you have these packages going to the game, and you don't really care what you call it. You can call it Old Brown Shoe if you want to. As long as everybody knows what Old Brown Shoe means, you can run those plays. And so I like the fact that they changed up, their tempo a little bit. They're using their players, guys like Tariq Cohen. They're using him everywhere. Sometimes he's a running back. Sometimes he's a jet sweep guy. Sometimes he's a wide receiver. But they have like basically two running backs in the game. He's basically a wide receiver, and teams are going nickel. When you do no huddle stuff and you move guys around, it can be very complex on the defense to speed it up. You have to have those guys make faster decisions, and sometimes they get lost in that no huddle. You saw him get lost on the corner route to Miller for a touchdown in that game. If you move fast and you have a multi-dimensional offense that the Bears have, man, I think that could be a really dangerous weapon for them if that can really confuse the defense. You saw the Lions get confused a couple times in this game.
The audio mixes on the broadcast are bringing us a lot of these line calls much clearer than ever, and we're hearing Sunday, meaning on one. We're hearing the Jared Goff call out Halle Berry, and it goes back to Peyton Manning with Omaha. How much of it is window dressing, and how much does a coach want a lot of that stuff? Well, once you get past the mic point and setting the protection, what should we be listening for? What do you listen for as a fan and an observer from which you might divine any meaning from any of that?
That's a good question. It's all about these languages and how the languages have different audibles, and that is an ever sort of changing thing over the years. I mean, people will have an audible for a certain type of play early in the season, and then once you've used it, especially now that everyone knows, everyone watches these TV copies of the game, they will change that audible to something different. And so it's hard to try to figure out exactly what teams are doing on the audibles, but sometimes it's window dressing. But for the most part, if you're, you know, walking around to the line and obviously using all the play clock and trying to communicate something, you're not going to do it for no reason. I do know Peyton Manning did a lot of it for window dressing, but to be honest with you, most guys, they're doing it for a reason. And again, the Halle Berry call, that's one of those things where, you know, rather than calling a super complex play, I feel like that was some sort of bootleg with a tight end sliding underneath and there's guys sort of going everywhere. That's hard to describe in an actual full play call. So just come up with the word Halle Berry for some reason, and obviously, you know, worked out for the Rams. But that's what teams do sometimes. It's a code word that describes a whole bunch of things. You also see it in, you know, let's say a red zone situation where a team is going to bring an all-out blitz and you're in some sort of bunch formation. A lot of times teams don't have a full audible. They just have a word that anytime we're in a bunch formation and you see a blitz, we automatically check to a what they call bunch crunch. It's like a toss sweep play. You might just have a word for that, whether it's right or whether it's left. And so, yeah, there's a ton of code stuff in the NFL. I mean, quarterbacks and what we do, you know, with the Giants, it was New York was to the right and L.A. was to your left. And so, you know, L.A. with a protection and then some sort of pass pattern. There's a million things that you can do, and each team sort of comes up with their system. And that system even evolves. You know, you take a coach in from one team. I bet you Matt Nagy's system is not the same as it was in Kansas City, and I bet you it's not the same as it is in 2 or 3 or 4 years. Those words have to change because the more you audible against these, you know, same teams, they're smart. Defenders are smarter than you think. They will remember what those audibles are. They're watching the TV copies. All that stuff is available now. It didn't used to be, and, you know, people have to change their stuff, so people aren't on top of what their audibles are.
Sage, good week to have you on the show this Tuesday and next. You cover the Vikings as close as anybody. That is the next matchup. How will this Vikings defense, which seems to have gotten things back together, how will they attack Mitch? You know, you've watched him grow and watch this Vikings defense as well. How do you figure they attack?
That's a good question. Yeah, I've watched the Vikings a lot this year. You know, where they have struggled, and they struggled earlier in the year, they were getting pushed around up front in the running game. And so teams are gaining in second and threes and second and fours. And that was the difference in last year. You know, Sheldon Richardson, the new D tackle for them, he's more of a pass rusher than one of those stout run blockers. And so they're getting pushed around a little bit. And then other teams, you know, they could run or they could pass. They could do whatever they wanted on second down. In the last couple of games, they have been much better against the run, holding teams to, you know, second eights and second and sevens. And that's created, and you know, sort of an advantageous spot for them defensively. Now, what concerns me about the Bears against the Vikings defense is the Bears have really fast, quick guys. That's their style of receivers. And you know, like Cohen and Gabriel and Miller, by the way, who is coming along. I mean, this kid's going to be a stud. I'm sure Bears fans are starting to love him. But those guys are smaller and fast and quick. Another Vikings opponent this year, the LA Rams, had three guys that were small, fast, and quick, and they decimated the Vikings defense in man-to-man coverage. You know, Xavier Rhodes is a very good DB, but he likes big physical play. Mm-hmm. Those small guys like Brandon Cooks and Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods in LA, he could not get his hands on them, and they could run right past them. Mm-hmm. So I would be very concerned as the Vikings defensive coordinator and Mike Zimmer, the head coach, about, you know, they play a lot of man-to-man, but do you want to play man-to-man against this, you know, style of offense, because these receivers and backs are so quick?
The other thing that man-to-man does is that creates scrambling opportunities for Mitchell Trubisky. I mean, I think you end up with a double-edged sword there. Unless you have a spy on him, he's going to read names on jerseys and maybe grab 8, 9, 10, 14 yards a chunk.
Yeah, they have been playing more zone defense as of late, and that's been sort of a changeup for them over the past. What you'll see is, as Bears fans, you'll see a lot of this double A gap blitz. They actually have two guys in the A gap, and then you have Harrison Smith and another linebacker on the edges and sort of the D gaps. And you know, there's really eight guys up, and you don't know which guys are going to come. And they usually game plan really well for that, and also still have guys trapping for what it would be your hot throw. And so you'll see plenty of that in this game. You're probably trying to confuse Trubisky a little bit. But I know this. I know that the Vikings are going to be really concerned about all these quick passes and trying to tackle. So my guess is that they're going to play more zone coverage, what we call a quarter half, which is sort of cover 4 on one side, and then, you know, cover 2 on the other side. or just some sort of straight cover too, and keep the ball in front of them. You know, make the Bears had a lot of big plays in that last game, and this year they make a lot of big plays. My question is maybe Mike Zimmer will wonder if they can force Trubisky to have, 13, 14 to 15 play drives, make him really earn it down the field, if he can do that without making some sort of mistake.
Sage, what has this season arc looked like from your perspective on Kirk Cousins?
Well, see, Kirk is an interesting, guy, because he puts up these stats that you look at, and I think he's like, sixth in the NFL or something and stats, or seventh as a quarterback. But then if you ask a Vikings fan, you're like, well, he's played really well in some games and not so well in some other games, and sort of up and down. What he does is his biggest flaw is that he takes a problem, a left tackle misses a block or somebody runs a crappy route. He takes that problem and many times makes it worse. And that's an issue with a quarterback. You don't want to compound a problem with a bigger problem. And he does that. He'll get pressure. He'll try to make a play and throw the ball somewhere and end up getting intercepted because he's got no juice on it, or he tries to step up in the pocket rather than just securing the ball and ends up being knocked out in the fumble in return for touchdown, which happened versus the Cardinals earlier this year. So he seems to compound a problem with another problem. If he can stay away from those, he has got a huge arm. He's extremely accurate. He's so good throwing to Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. He's got great rapport with those guys. That is what his strength is. They don't have a complex offense. You will not see anything like what the Bears run on offense. It's much more traditional, much more quarterback under center, straight drop back pass, a little play action, some bootleg, but not they deal with a few wide receiver screens, but nothing like all the stuff that that the Bears are doing.
That is as complete a scouting report as you're going to get the Bears' next opponent, because this is right guy at the right time. Sage Rosenfels, we thank you as always.
Thanks, Sage.
Look forward to talking after this game.
All right, guys, should be a great game. It's fun to have the Bears in contention here and in the lead in the NFC North, so it should be a fun game this weekend.
No question. We'll talk again on Tuesday. Sage Rosenfels, brought to you by Webb Chevy. Searching for a great deal on Chevys in Chicago? Visit Webb Chevy in Plainfield or Oak Lawn. And this segment's brought to you by Art of Pizza on State Street. Stop in or carry out thin pan or deep dish, hot, fresh, ready-to-go pizza slices from Art of Pizza on State Street and Polk. Choose from up to 18 varieties of slices for delivery or pickup from Art of Pizza on State Street, 727 South State Street.
I really like the way that Sage was describing Kirk Cousins complicating things by making his own mistakes after other people have made mistakes. Kind of reminded me of a quarterback that I've seen a number of times here in town, but that's neither here nor there.
Somebody who propagates bad
into
worse.
Yeah, that guy just kind of kept on making mistakes. Just keep on.
The kinetic chain of errors, yes.
Hang on to the football!
At the bottom of the hour, Clayton Thorson is scheduled to join us. I also have a counterintuitive stat when it comes to success or failure of kickers at Soldier Field. And it stands on its ear, something that we may take as gospel that isn't necessarily so.
I love popping bubbles.
Let's do it.
That's next. Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
An excited Northwestern team being told that they just won their side of the Big Ten, winning the West Division title. And do you really think they didn't know? You think that was real?
I would imagine some of them knew.
Yeah, we'll ask Clayton Thorson when we hear from him in just a couple of minutes.
So, got to ask.
Here's just a note for you that was sent in by Scott in Davenport. He said that call yesterday, Frank from Oak Park, talking about Cody Parkey kicking in Soldier Field, said, I'm confounded that a kicker wouldn't practice in the actual stadium, particularly one who hasn't been here before and plays in a stadium where wind can be a factor. Field goal data goes back to 1960. He says, but I'm more interested in data since 2016 after Robbie Gould left the Bears.
Okay.
What I found was interesting. Field goal percentage at Soldier Field since 2016. Bears kickers are 21 of 30. That's 70%. It's 31st in the NFL. Visiting kickers are 39 of 41. 95.1% tops in the NFL.
That's bizarre.
It means the Bears have had some really bad kickers, but it doesn't explain why kickers who don't have experience in Soldier Field are better here than anywhere else. It's the highest visiting kicking percentage. When we're saying you have to get familiar, it's so weird, it's so hard to kick there, it's so different, then why has it been the easiest place for visiting kickers to kick?
Let me run a theory by you. The Bears have been bad on offense since 2016, with the exception of this year, right? Mm-hmm. So that would
longer
mean
kicks?
They're kicking longer kicks, whereas their opponents, with the knowledge that Soldier Field is a tough place to kick anyway, plus the understanding that their offense may be closer because of those kicks, or because of that offense working a little bit better, maybe they've just got closer kicks. Maybe it's a function of the distance they're kicking.
I just think it's bizarre.
21 of 30 for 31st in the league, and everyone else is 95.1%?
Yes, visiting kickers are owning Soldier Field.
And that's not PATs, that's just field goals.
That's as far as I know. That's what he's got. He says, you're seeing this correctly. Visiting kickers are almost perfect at Soldier Field, and Bears kickers are among the worst. Said what the conclusion for Scott here is that a large part of what affects this is the person kicking the ball. And since Robbie Gould's departure, almost to the day since he started appearing with Spiegs and Manley back in 2014, not a joke, says kicking at Soldier Field is something that Bears kickers aren't that good at. And actually, in these stats is 49ers Robbie Gould, right? Who single-handedly beat them 15-0.
Buried five, yeah. Right? That would be absolutely true. That's crazy.
Isn't that weird?
I mean, at the moment,
I don't know what to make of it, really.
When Cody Parkey in a post-game mentioned that he's never thought of coming to Soldier Field to kick. That's not been a thing on his mind, or it's not his place to do it or to offer that. I went on with what he was talking about the idea that, you know, it's the day he was supposed to have and all this kind of stuff. I guess it took me a while to realize how crazy it was for him to not go down there and kick in the environment he's going to kick in.
You'd think that you'd really want to do that. I don't know.
Yeah, you would imagine.
Right? But to get some familiarity with it?
Because you can. That's the opportunity afforded to you by, sure, an hour and a half away, but just an hour and a half.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern basketball. Coach Collins and the Cats return to the new Welsh Ryan Arena on Friday as they host Binghamton. Get there early as ESPN's Pardon the Interruption will be taping live from 3:15 to 4:15 p.m. For more information, visit nusports.com/PTI. And this segment is brought to you by Get Covered Illinois. Enrollment for Get Covered Illinois is now open. You must sign up for a plan by December 15th to start 2019 with the coverage you need. Go to GetCoveredIllinois.gov or call 1-866-311-1119 to shop for a plan or schedule free in-person help.
Meanwhile, I know we're going to get to a quick interview with Clayton Thorson here in just a second, but we, at some point later on in the day, we're going to have to get to what Jimmy Butler has been talking about in his introductory press conference with the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah, he's a vainglorious dude, isn't he?
We've had quite some interesting press conferences here the last few weeks. This one takes the cake.
The NBA just never stops. Lately, Northwestern hasn't either. Northwestern has clinched the Big Ten West Division with their 14-10 win at Iowa, led by this man, their helmsman, their quarterback. I believe he is in his 11th year quarterbacking the Northwestern Wildcats. He is Clayton Thorson with us on The Score. Clayton, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Wonderfully. Obviously, the celebration, I don't know if you caught it, we played some of the celebration when you guys were made aware that the West was yours and that it was won. Did no one know? Was that really the first time that you guys had been told that after the ballgame?
Yeah, that was the first time we were told that. We were just focused down on winning, and obviously that was just the icing on the cake after the big win there in Iowa City.
How long has it really taken for you to recover from your knee injury? Being okay enough to play is different than really feeling that everything's you again. And you know, any of us have gone through a knee reconstruction. As it was explained to me, my orthopedist used the term gestalt to describe the knee. He said it's more than the sum of its parts. There are things that go on in there in a remodeling that even the best doctors don't really understand. And it's very personal for each person that goes through it. Is it there yet, even?
I don't know when it will, or if it is, or when it's there specifically. The doctors have always just kept saying, you're just going to keep getting better and better. as time goes on. And that's how I felt this season. Every week I feel better and better. You know, even taking shots, you know, it just continues to feel better, which is really encouraging. And, you know, I've gained so much confidence in it over the season. But, you know, I just think back to even that Purdue game and where I'm at right now, just how I'm feeling with it. And, you know, it's just night and day. And so I just continue to get better each week. And so that's what I'll continue to have to do.
How have you worked with your coaches, with your teammates, as the offense has had to be reworked? You guys have had some obviously big changes at running back over the course of the year. The running game itself has, I think, probably had to been reworked. How's it been being at the center of all of that?
Yeah, you know, it's great. I mean, I love, you know, figuring out ways to best use the guys on our team and figuring out ways that we're going to win and beat a defense. You know, throughout the week, our coaches are always talking with us and different ideas, things we're going to put in. And so I think we've started to find our groove a little bit and figure out how our running backs run best and different things that work for us. So, you know, it's fun being in there and being a captain and having to lead these guys. It's been a great year so far, and we got a lot of ball left to play.
That was such a catch by Skoranek, too, in the back of the end zone, and I wasn't sure. In real speed, I saw it. I went, wait a second, I think he caught it. And then the fact that they didn't just say the call stands, they said the call is confirmed, giving that extra bit of emphasis on just what a play that was. What's running through your mind as you're calculating where to put that ball and whether you thought he could close the distance?
Yeah, you know, I was just trying to put it up there for him to catch it, really, anywhere. He's got a big reach, and so I know I just got to give him a chance, and he's got a much better odds of coming down with it. You know, you saw earlier in the game, just throwing it up to him on a go route, you know, just kind of late, but knowing that either he's going to come down with the ball or he's going to get a call. And so he's a great receiver, and you know, I didn't really think it was a catch at first either. I tried not to celebrate, tried to get ready for the next play, and then they said it was a touchdown. So it was pretty sweet. Amazing, amazing play by him.
Northwestern quarterback Clayton Thorson on the Bernstein and McKnight show here for a few minutes. Can you, Clayton, I wonder how best you can take us inside your team and inside the conversations that happen September 30th. That's the day after a loss to Duke, a loss to Akron, and then a loss to Michigan, three in a row, and you guys have bounded back and taken a Big Ten West. How closely can you take us inside what was talked about?
Yeah, you know, there was a lot of, you know, players only meetings and guys really coming together. And, you know, we knew we had a lot of talent, and, you know, we let that one against Akron get away from us. And, you know, against Michigan, we knew we were playing a really good team, but at the same time, we felt like, you know, we could have come out on top, and credit to them. They kept battling back and came back and won the game, and they deserved to win that game. So, but we knew we had a good team. And so we just decided we got to stay together. We're not going to be pointing fingers here. We're going to stay together, and we're going to get this thing done. And credit to everyone in this locker room. That's what we've done. And so I'm just so proud to be a part of this team and these guys here.
Are your studies wrapped up now? Are you a grad student? Where are you relative to the coursework that's still left?
So instead of taking grad school, I decided to leave one class from kind of undergraduate, actually. So I graduated in June, technically, but I just left one class to do now. And so I'm taking one class on, you know, Tuesdays and Thursdays for an hour. So it's pretty good deal right now.
Is it what, woodworking?
Ballroom or dancing?
Yeah, what is it?
It's called personal development.
Ah. How's that coming along for you, Clayton?
It's great. It is awesome.
Really developing as a person, I think.
For an hour, 2 days a week, that is the way to walk out your senior year, man.
Yeah, it sure is.
What's your favorite part of the new facilities? Like literally your favorite one thing, the place you go, the room you're in, the feature that's got you the most geeked.
I just love our quarterback room. You know, we never had a quarterback meeting room before, and so now we have these comfy chairs and, you know, access to unlimited film. And so that's all I really need. That's where I spend most of my time, and so I love that place.
How much NFL football do you watch, and how much do you think about what's next?
I try to watch you know, a little bit of a few games every day, or every Sunday, excuse me. I like watching the Bears, but I also like NFL Red Zone. So I'll turn it on here and there. But, you know, a lot of times on Sundays we're preparing for our next game. But in terms of, you know, the NFL, I just, you know, thankfully that the only thing that really matters in helping me get there is producing here. And so that's allowed me to focus a lot on what's going on right now, right in front of me.
We are talking with Northwestern quarterback Clayton Thorson. The Northwestern Wildcats have clinched the Big Ten West Division title with their win at Iowa and some fortuitous losses around the division. I loved what Pat Fitzgerald said yesterday, like the coachiest coach stuff about even though you technically don't need to beat Minnesota and Illinois for this upcoming championship game against likely either Michigan or Ohio State, he said teams are designed to do their best to try to win and do everything they can do to win games. And I don't think he could have said it any better. He didn't come off like some kind of ranting meatball as some of these coaches do. It was just, a very well-explained way of saying you're in the business of preparing a certain way and with certain expectations. Are you feeling that now as you're getting into the preparation for the next game, even though everybody knows it's already salted away? Is it still a way that players can convince themselves, yeah, we got to have this one?
Yeah, I think, I remember how we played up there 2 years ago and how they whooped us. They're a really good team. They just beat up on a good Purdue team as well. But yeah, Coach is exactly right. We're so focused on this game that, we're not even thinking about, Indy right now, but we know that's coming up and we know we got to prepare that way, like you said, having a championship mindset. And, Nate Hall said it really well. He said, champions win. And so that's all we're focused on right now.
Clayton, you're going to start your 50th straight game against Minnesota. I wonder, and not a lot of college – I mean, the guy quarterbacking the Bears, Mitchell Trubisky, had 13 college starts. You're approaching 50.
That's a lot of football to play for free, man. Wow.
Do you – if you could go back and talk to Clayton Thorson before he makes his first college football start, what would you tell him?
I would just tell him to soak it all in. Just tell him the most important thing, preparation. And thankfully, that's what I learned at that age from Trevor. But just to enjoy it and enjoy every step of it. I think I would just teach him about what it takes to play quarterback a little more. I think the confidence, the quiet confidence it takes to play quarterback at this level. So, I don't know exactly what I'd say, but that's pretty cool. I never thought about that.
Clayton, a couple of games left and then a bowl game likely in this college career. You got the championship game to play in. Hey, soak it up. Enjoy. And really, best of luck with the personal development, because we got to pull an A in that one. We got to finish strong here. Champions will finish strong.
Beat the curve.
I got to. Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Clayton.
You too. Clayton Thorson, the Northwestern quarterback.
Tuesdays and Thursdays for an hour.
I was on that plan too in college.
You took the one class, walkout class?
I could have graduated a semester early because it was before they changed the rules on AP credits. You now get less credit for AP scores than you used to. And somehow I kind of got lucky with the way the numbers all fell. So by second semester senior year, I went to part-time student status and only had two courses, which allowed me to be
incredible.
To take what was an internship at the ABC affiliate and basically work full time at the television station while still technically a student.
I'd be drunk the rest of the time.
No, yep. I was busting my ass because there wasn't a union shop, so I could do whatever I wanted. They'd say, hey, get a camera crew and go cover the World League of American Football team. Do whatever you want. Put a package together. They taught me, I'd come in early. They taught me how to edit video highlights for baseball. I covered Durham Bulls games. And they were happy to have the help.
That was not my senior year experience. I'm glad. I didn't declare my major until about 3 days before I walked. Freshman year full of setbacks from drinking and Halo, and I didn't declare until about 3 days before, so I was stuck taking weed out classes with freshmen my junior and senior year.
Weed out?
Yes.
Oh, weed classes.
No, that was freshman year,
okay.
Which set me back to have to take the classes.
Gotcha. We have the midway coming up at the top of the hour. I have a full movie review for you to get a little in-depth. And explain that. By the way, did you see how bad the NHL concussion settlement is?
It looks awful.
This is, I use the term, this is almost like satire. It's like they won $4.
I have a conspiracy theory concerning the concussion settlement in the NHL.
Really?
I am working on a
Are you serious?
I'm working on a half-baked, if not full-baked, conspiracy theory regarding this. I don't know. I'm going to have to work around how I phrase it, because obviously I don't want any of the trouble. But I've got a conspiracy theory working.
Okay, very cool. I'm looking forward to hearing it. I'm always here for stuff like that. Didn't know you had one, but I'm interested in hearing it. He's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. Bernstein and McKnight, 9-1. Middays on the Score. Yeah, that was a thing.
29-inch feet.
Well, he then amended that.
7 foot tall man.
He said 7 feet tall with 29-inch feet. He then amended his testimony to 29-inch legs, and he's 6 feet tall.
And I still don't know whether he played offensive or defensive line. As you notice, he played offensive line at the beginning and then defensive line later.
It was too dangerous, and he was too strong to be in the weight room.
Too dangerous, ice.
We learned
man.
A lot. This segment brought to you by Grandview Homes. Grandview will buy your home today. Go to grandviewhomes.com. So you see, ooh, NHL and the retired players have reached a concussion settlement totaling $19 million.
That's not a lot of money.
The NFL settlement, which isn't enough money and isn't getting to the players, was $1 billion.
You think this one's going to actually get to the players?
No.
$19 million?
No, it's not, because they'll run the same playbook the NFL is running, which is if you have the slightest part-time job doing anything, they'll say, oh, you're fine to work, you're not disabled.
Yeah, they'll cover some screens, and they'll cover some baseline tests, and they'll make sure they cover their liability as best they can after the settlement. But you're right. You're going to be kept away from some of the money, and some of the symptoms or diseases that come after the playing time aren't going to be covered enough by that settlement to begin with, right? It was wasn't it the Parkinson's diagnoses that were really draining a lot of the money out of that NFL concussion settlement we were reading?
ALS, Parkinson's.
Yes. ALS and Parkinson's, yes. Right. Those were those two things. I wonder, you know, it's such a terrible, terrible settlement that's not going to end up helping players enough that it leads me to wonder whether or not there's more to it than perhaps just the settlement.
But the lawyers are saying, well, we did our best. There's only so much you can do when they've barely admitted that hitting your head is bad for you.
Yeah, and the interesting part there is the league has never said, correct me if I'm wrong, this is what the lawyers have said for the players. The league, the NHL itself, has never allowed any connection between playing hockey and any sort of brain
correct.
Issue.
Correct.
Now,
what's your conspiracy theory?
Pretty obviously that's wrong, right?
Sure.
Repetitive brain injury and massive concussion, that's all bad for you, but doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to contract CTE, and that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have long-term cognitive problems. It's probably worse than it is good, but you don't want that kind of stuff. I can't help but think, and I've been thinking about this for many years, the NHL only, and the Players Association, only recently started testing for cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
3-4 years ago, something like that. And I can't help but think that in a league where you've clearly got balance of power issues between the Players Association and the ownership and the league itself, I can't help but think that an absence of that, this giant issue that and as you go through these settlements, these aren't going to be players that just recently retired. These are going to be players that played in the 90s. These are going to be players that played in the 80s. These are going to be players whose lifestyles themselves, ask neurologists, ask doctors about what it is that leads to cognitive impairment, what it is that leads to issues of the brain.
What are the factors beyond just actual
having
brain
played
trauma.
Hockey?
Right.
Those factors are going to be things that you hear in stories from players, whether they've written them on the Players Tribune or whether they've lived those lives and those stories have been told posthumously. These are the stories we're going to hear about.
Substance abuse.
And whether that's illegal substances or whether that's a vast alcohol issue.
Painkillers.
All of that stuff can lead to bigger issues. And in a league that has denied the linkage between playing the sport and any kind of brain injury, as dastardly as that is, as bad as that is for players and as untrue as that is, you know, I can't help but wonder of some sort of confluence between not testing for some things that can cause issues like this, or at the very least complicate the issues, and not being able to link that back to players' behavior or playing time.
And then throwing it right back at them in any of these private negotiations, saying, if you're going to do this, we, on large scale, are going to start bringing up a league-wide cocaine problem.
That would be the end-of-days conspiracy theory. Yeah,
right. I'm just trying to play this out.
Yeah, saying, if you play what, it down
or,
as...
Or whatever substance you want to say. Like, we will deny coverage based on reasonable awareness of substance abuse, saying you brought this upon yourself.
Really, at the end of this, Daniel Carcillo is asking, among others, is asking for the league to help more and
right.
stop denying the fact that this even exists in their players. This settlement doesn't do enough to get anywhere close to that.
They can't afford to. It's not like the NFL. They can't afford to help more. Even if the NFL wanted to,
Well, then you got to help during their playing careers. That's what Carcillo continues to say. He had very little help in doing. It was personal help from Joel Quenneville,
right?
And guys who aren't trained as good as that help was for him to get. That's untrained. That's not professional help with the issues he was suffering at the time.
Here's the counter argument, though. I believe if I'm understanding the experts correctly, that brain trauma can cause a higher likelihood of addiction to some of these supposed remedies, right?
I believe that can happen.
I'd
have to check.
Cart before the horse here, where if they're going to say, look, it all sort of works hand in hand, where some of the enforcers in dealing with their pain get hooked on painkillers, then they start taking other things, and we start hearing all the stories about, who was the former Bear, Eben Britton? Remember what he was writing about and talking about the fog that he was in when he was even down to tobacco usage and marijuana? That long essay that he wrote about dealing with brain trauma, dealing with pain and the entire syndrome of it that takes you down these roads, it makes you way more susceptible to addiction. So there's probably some more gray area in there.
At the end of this, the owners realized that they could deny and deny and deny and deny and come out with just a $19 million check and they'd be fine. That shouldn't be okay. That shouldn't be allowed.
It's just an amazingly paltry sum of money. We have the Midday Midway that is coming up next. I've got UFOs being seen by airline pilots, and they're frightened. They're reporting everything, and they don't know what they're seeing from way up in the sky. We had a story like this before, and they were very, very fast-moving objects that moved away at ridiculously high speeds. And again, I also have the best Christmas tree ornament you'll ever find, and I have a movie review.
Midday Midway next. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.